Welcome back, beloveds, to another beautiful episode of Experiment 301. I'm your host, Kevin K. Pierce, also known as Brother Beloved, and I got a real special guest with me today, ladies and gentlemen. If happiness was a person, it might be the person across from me right now. I dealt with him for, I believe it was a year or two years?
We're together a year.
But in that year of working with him, it is rare when you called him out of energy. Never saw him in a distinctly bad mood, always upbeat, always lifting the team up. And he doesn't know how much that was appreciated, because there were some times where I wasn't at my best, and having him with his infectious energy really got me where I needed to be. So, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully I do not butcher this last name, but help me welcome to the show, Mr. Patrick Murnan. How are you doing, sir?
Dude, I'm doing well. You put it so well. That was just the most fun staff I've ever had. I've had 5 years of RAs going on my sixth, and every meeting was a laugh. We were cracking up all the time. So that was just a perfect blend of some really great personalities and senses of humor.
That's how you know you have a great staff, when at some point during the meeting you're like, okay, the jokes are great, but we have to be productive at some point.
Yeah, I loved it.
So I gotta ask before we get started, how are you and the family dealing with the quarantine? How you doing?
We're doing all right. I mean, so I've been able to see, obviously, my mom and dad. My mom has worked, she's a nurse, so she, especially in April and May, she's worked on the COVID floor.
Shout out to the essential workers.
Yeah, also, shout out to Terry's. They catered my mom's hospitals, like when she worked at, for free. So Terry's always takes care of students and students, and they continue to take care of people. So hell yeah to Terry and Manella, so they did a great job there. But she's fine. She's doing well. My dad, not related to COVID, he's about to have hip surgery. He's getting up there in age. So he, what is that, 2 weeks, he's getting his hip taken out. So a man that used to play football and basketball is now reached the end of his hip. So he's got to get a titanium hip.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully we pray for him a speedy recovery right off the hip replacement. Of course.
Yes.
So I like to start all my podcasts the same way. I'm not going to try and guess the year, but a young Patrick is born where and to who?
1992. So I just celebrated my 28th birthday.
Dang. I want to guess that year, too.
There you go. You got to put some money down, you know? and I'm from Pasadena. So I'm from Anne Arundel County, so we're not too far apart from our birthplaces. I've been in Maryland my whole life, outside 2 years when I worked at Rowan.
So Pasadena is a, I'd say, lesser known part of Maryland. Can you explain Pasadena to someone who's never been there?
Sure. I think Brandon Stevens would do it the best. So it's a water town geographically. So it's surrounded by rivers and the Chesapeake Bay. So everything is basically, someone has a boat, someone has a jet ski, you know, someone that lives on water. And then it's a town that's, it's small. It only has two high schools. I think that's always like a big relevant. How big is your town? How many high schools do you have? So it's only two high schools.
Right.
And I would just say, like, it's a middle-class town that they just, they have fun. I mean, there's a lot of sports. I grew up anywhere you went, there's only two high schools, but there's all these different leagues you could be in and recreational stuff. So, I don't know. I had a great time growing up there.
There we go. So, do you have, like, a go-to boating or on the water story?
A go-to boating. So I do remember. So my dad's from Chicago. So water town is the opposite. He's used to wind and snow.
Right.
So when him and my mom met, and they eventually had me, they don't really know anything about water. They don't know much about like boating. So a friend that I had growing up, they lived on the water. They had a jet ski. And my mom's like, so what's a jet ski? So I was like, it's just like a small boat. She's like, oh, take him out on it. So I'm 5 years old, just riding on the back of my friend's jet ski, holding on for dear life. Like, ah, I'm really scared. I don't know how to swim yet.
Oh, that's rich. I love it.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward to high school. Which one of the two high schools in Pasadena did you go to?
Neither.
So door number three. I love door
number three. I went out of town. My parents wanted me to go to a private high school that was closer to my mom's work. So I went there. So on her way to work, a lot of the days she just dropped me off at school.
So was it like, whenever I someone tells me they went to a high school outside of their district, I always picture Fresh Prince of Bel Air for some strange reason. So was it kind of that type of vibe? Like, all right, this guy's not from the traditional private school area, or was it just smooth sailing from all through?
In high school, it was fine because, you know, being at a private high school, you had people coming from every different direction. So you had some people were in your town, which was nice, and some people were the opposite side of the county entirely. You had people from PG that came out to my high school.
Shout out to PG.
Shout out to PG. Of course, shout out to PG.
And then, a lot of shout outs in this episode. I like it.
Absolutely. You have to do it. In Experiment 301, hello.
Like this guy.
There you go.
Got smart. I told y'all he was sharp.
But in my town, it was almost kind of like you're different. So coming home was always just like I didn't come home on a bus. I didn't come home on that. So that was like the difference of being opposite. So I guess if in the Fresh Prince example, if he came home to West Philadelphia, he might be treated differently now.
Right. So throughout high school, are you the same energetic, fun-loving Patrick that we know today, and did that kick in later?
That kicked in later. I think I was always loud, but in terms of being confident and energetic, because I think you have to be okay with being judged and okay with being who you are in order to be this kind of crazy, energetic individual, because if you're not okay with that, people are going to judge you regardless. You have to be okay with who you are. So that kicked into college.
All right, perfect. And that leads us right into college then. I can't remember if you told me you were an RA in college or not.
I was, yeah. So at Salisbury, I don't have anything in the background or wearing. I always usually have something Salisbury on. But I was an RA there for 2 years, and that's really when you got to, you know, lead the floor, be a leader, show your personality, and tell your freshmen it's okay being a little weird and different. So I love it.
And that's where the outgoingness started, when you were trying to get people to be comfortable in their own skin. It kind of led you to do it yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I was a tour guide in college too. So naturally kind of showing the scared sort of high school students that were, this is a big university, like, am I going to fit in? And then he was like, yeah, you can totally fit in. Like, everyone finds their little, you know, area that makes them like their clique, and there's a place for everyone here. And I don't know, I just would really great that going through Salisbury or just walking from class to class, I would like, I don't know, pepper in like many conversations you have on your way to class, because I knew I was going to make it to class in 5 minutes. I knew someone's going to stop me. I was going to chat up somebody, and it was just a nice social environment.
There we go. So it sounds like you're pretty high on the go to RA list. There's an imaginary list of all the all-star RAs that I feel like you found yourself on.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I was saying there's like an imaginary list of all the GOAT RAs that I feel like you have found yourself on, especially
making you
feel comfortable.
Thank you.
From the tour guide perspective, and then when they come on campus. Did you ever have that experience, like someone you took on a tour became your resident later on?
Yes, I had one of those people, and it was a weird experience. They actually shared my birthday, too. That's why they were so memorable.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so they, and it's very funny. She was from Anne Arundel County, and she ended up dating someone in my neighborhood, and they're still dating today. So, small world.
Very small world. And again, more shout-outs.
Yeah.
To the relationship. So I have to ask, I love asking former RAs this. What was your worst RA experience? What was the moment where you're like, you know what, yo, this room and board ain't really worth it?
So I'm sure you remember this, Kevin. Like, your first year as an RA, for whatever reason, is always like your better year. You're learning things, you're having fun, you're getting to know a lot of people. The second year is that, like, sophomore, where there's some changes that whatever, you know, your boss wants or your department wants, and you're like, I look less, you're better. So my second year as an RA, my sophomore slump, I guess, we had a new assistant director. And I don't know if she was, like, military trained. But we went to a camp, not like Pearlstone, but it was, like, a much longer, no air conditioning. You slept, like, in 90-degree cabins. It was rough in it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was a rough experience. There would be a little culture.
I imagine all the RAs were thrilled to be there. Just having a grand old time.
But in addition to that, so the year before was really fun. I mean, it's like a high ropes and low ropes course too. But she decided that every morning she'd wake us up and we do calisthenics, push-ups, and exercise at 7 a.m. And I got to tell you, like, she lost everybody. Like nobody was on board. We're all looking at each other like, man, what is going on with this girl? So she did not win the popularity contest that year.
Yeah, of course. How is this supposed to help with the RA?
I don't know. It was, she left a really bad taste in my mouth. So not about maybe a week after training ended, so like first week of school, my grandmother passed.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and thank you. It was like 7 years ago now. So my RD at the time, super cool, was like, oh, cool, go home, get out of here, see ya. And I was dating someone at the time that was super supportive and like knew my family, so I just assumed she'd be coming with me. And as we were like literally packing our car, loading our car, that person was just like, oh, she can't come with you. She didn't lose a grandmother. And
wow.
Right. So I was livid. I mean, you know, like you said, I'm a happy person, happy, you go lucky guy. But if you cross me, I do have a switch. And I definitely showed that day. Didn't lose my job, but definitely made some very valid, angry points as to why she should come with me.
Oh, my Lord. Where do you get off even trying to say something like that? That's so wild. I got to switch gears, man. I need your best RA story to counteract that. Because, oh, my God.
When I was an RA?
Yeah, so, your best RA story from when you were still an RA, man.
So my first year as an RA, right? Yeah, I always go to the first year. We had communal bathrooms in our most of our buildings at Salisbury, at least not anymore. They've all changed. But when I was in RA, there was a bunch of communal bathrooms. So part of our job, first off, we went on duty by ourselves. I'll tell them, I don't mind. We went on duty by ourselves, and part of our job was to check those bathrooms. Mostly, 99% of the time, it was just to make sure people were not throwing up or, I suppose, having sex in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it is 2 a.m. It's a Friday night. I'm on duty by myself, doing rounds. Normal night, actually. It's actually kind of quiet. I open the door, and there's a girl laying up against the wall, topless. So I'm like, hey, you okay? You all right over there? And she's like, I can't find my friends. I don't know where my friends went. And I'm like, all right, let me find any female in the building that can help you find your friends. So it's 2 a.m. Either the girls were gone and still out, or they were dead asleep. So I'm like waking girls up. I'm like, can you help this girl in the bathroom? She's a little drunk, I think. She doesn't have clothes on, so bring her like a blanket or a towel and just get her home safely, for the love of God. So that, I suppose, was the best story, because it's one that it's not like such a crazy story, but it's just like, why do you let – this is why we probably don't have communal bathrooms anymore, because we're letting male RAs check female bathrooms.
Yeah, man, because that was – because the moment you said that, I was like, wow, that could have gone so many different ways.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who eventually – she lived in my building. She wasn't one of my residents. I don't know who told her what happened the next day, but she never made eye contact with me for the rest of the semester.
I can imagine. All right, so from these RA tales, at some point you decided that you wanted to take this to the next level and become a resident director as well. So what led into that decision?
So, well, I had two RDs at Salisbury that thought that this was my calling, that I would do great in res life. I went to college to be a teacher. So I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm just going to be a history teacher. Like, I stopped being an RA my senior year so I could focus on my student teaching internship. When I taught, like, physically, I got hired after, you know, I graduated and all that. It was just a completely different world, if that makes any sense. Your internship is like this warm hug and people are so supportive and they're talking to you and they're patting you on your back. And the moment you graduate, it's like, you better know what you're doing. We're hitting the road tomorrow. Get with the program. So there was no support. There was no training for that first year teacher. And I just felt the warm bubble of res life versus the real life. So I left. I mean, I probably barely made it through maybe 6 months of teaching before I started applying for these RD jobs. I was like, hey, you know, I'll try what my RD said. I'll try this out. I'll do basically a graduate RD, a graduate hall director. I'll apply in Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and Delaware and Maryland, Virginia, wherever I could get a job. And I got offered one at Rowan. Being a grad RD is actually much harder than just being a full-time professional RD, because you got to go to grad school at night. And we had physically, I had physically in-person classes. So my office hours were like 8 to 4, and then 5 to 8 were my grad classes each night. And then I had meetings for like myself and my hall and my team. So I, and then I had homework and papers and stuff like that. So
it was, so you just didn't sleep at all?
Very little. I've definitely got way more sleep as a full-time professional. I've gotten way more rest. And that was always like the goal, I guess, is just to get through 2 years of hell and then your life gets easier. And that's true. I've, you know, since I've come to Stevenson, it's been much more manageable. I enjoy what I do. I don't feel stressed out all the time. Maybe that's why I present always as so happy and energetic, because I have energy. But yeah, so it's a much better position now than doing grad school and this job.
So what led from going to Ronan to Stevenson?
I wanted to come home, I think is the biggest pull there. I miss Maryland. People eat in Jersey, eat crabs, but not the way we do. Old Bay is a rare delicacy there. It's a sad statement.
Whoa. There are people who exist that eat crabs without Old Bay?
They call them clean crabs. And it is basically a completely – it's sacrilege.
Yeah.
There's no spice on it.
I'd have to leave the table. I don't think I can handle that. Like, as a Marylander, I can't handle that.
Yeah. So Old Bay literally wasn't in stores in Jersey. If I wanted Old Bay, I would find it in Maryland and then bring it up to me in Jersey, but it was just not a thing. So
I would have left quick, fast, and then I heard.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did. I did a national search. I interviewed with schools from Texas to Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania. Like, I was really open to going anywhere. It was kind of cool to kind of get what I thought was like a celebrity treatment. There was a school in Virginia that liked me so much, they wanted to fly me down from Jersey/Philadelphia to their school. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, they got me like first class tickets. I'm like, who is doing this? People got Res Life money? What? They took me out for drinks immediately. I'm just like, I thought we weren't supposed to drink on interviews. They're like, we won't tell. I'm like, okay. But they didn't offer me a job. I know. But hey, it worked out for you and us. We've never met each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Stevenson just made a lot of sense. I had a great experience with Bonnie. Shout out to Bonnie for just showing me, just having a great interview from the moment I met her, just being a great person. I don't know if she's a guest that you want to have on the show, but she's a great person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I like how you brought, and because me and you were on the same page, you brought up Bonnie right at the right point. So coming into Stevenson, you are actually taking Bonnie's spot. And for those that don't know, Ms. Bonnie McGee, she is one of the more beloved staff that Stevenson has had in my tenure, and I'd venture to say before that and after that. So what was that like stepping into that role? Like, all right, these RAs are used to a certain person, and now not only do I have to ingratiate myself, did you see it as like, all right, I have to fill these shoes, or I'm just going to come in and be me and go for it?
Definitely the latter. I think trying to fill shoes, you're never going to be able to fit in them. So I did my best to not live in comparison. I don't know if you remember, Kev, but like one of our first meetings we had in August in training said, I'm not trying to be Bonnie. I'm not trying to fill her shoes. I'm just trying to be me. You're going to get 100% honest me. You're going to get who I am. I'm not going to try to be fake with you all. And I hope we can have a good time and learn some stuff too. So I think that attitude really helped me. Helped me form that team. You guys were fun with me. You were open with me. And I think that combination just led to me being able to form my own image and not like live in someone else's shoes or shit someone else's shadow.
There we go. And quite the image you formed, because I want to get into a little talks about our staff. Not much though. So what was your favorite moment from our staff? Because I got a couple. So I want to know where you go to first.
See, I don't know if I have just any favorite moment that just peeks out. Like I said, just the fact that meetings never felt like work is such a rarity in the world that when I got like an evaluation or when I just got just whatever from you guys, the biggest thing that you guys liked was coming to Tuesday night meetings never felt like work. It felt like I look forward, like Justin Kilo was like, I look forward to the laughter every week because it was a long, shitty day for me, and I was so happy to finally come home to these people. Lindsay looked forward to it. Brandon, I know, looked forward to it. Dan did. Bryson did. Gerald did. So it's just some of these great people, Delaney, that truly looked forward to seeing each other. And I just thought that moment is so rare because outside Red's life, I don't really see that often, where people look forward to a meeting because they love their coworker so much.
Right. And honestly, one of my favorite memories is that meeting literally changing my day. I had a migraine the entire day. I couldn't go to none of my classes. I got some bad family news in the same day. So I don't know if you remember, I came in, hood up, glasses on, don't speak to me. I'm just sitting in a corner. And being in that room, that type of environment, you can't be that way. Yeah. Like, they'll bring it out of you one way or another, no matter what's going on. You're going to chuckle. You're going to smile. You're going to make something else to make your day better. So I always want to let you know I appreciate that.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, like I said, it's just the vibe of that team worked out so well. All of us coming in and just being who we are worked out. And I don't think anyone was fake on that team. No one was anything but themselves, and I really appreciate that.
There we go. So I want to shift gears a little bit because you, sir, are a collector of interesting things, and I love interesting thing collection. There it is. For those not watching the video, he just showed us his impressive bobblehead collection. You were well into triple figures when our last time we spoke about this. So I need to know what's the number at now and give me like your five prized most bobbleheads.
It's 425. I have 425 bobbleheads right now. Because of the major league season and minor league season not really happening or being able to do any game giveaways, it hasn't grown at all in 2020, which is probably good. It's good for my wallet, that's for sure. Five most prized. So I'll get numero uno.
All right, as he gets numero unos, we also see his background full of the flags and pennants. We'll get to those shortly.
So this is my first ever one. So it's Sam the Seagull. And a lot in the collector world, you talk about, like, what was your first bobblehead? What kind of got you started? So I was talking about being a tour guide. That was like our senior, I guess, gift send-off, if you will. I got a blanket and a bobblehead. I'm like, oh, cool. That's fine. And it just stayed on my mantle. And when I was a teacher, it just stayed on with me at, like, a couple years at Rowan. So I had a bobblehead for 2 years without being a collector of them. And then usually when people, again, collectors, like, what was your first one? Usually your most pride, like, when you couldn't give up, and I don't think I could give this up just because of the sentimentality behind it. I'm a huge Griffey guy, so really any of them, but I mean, there's certain ones that I hold really dear. So Ken Griffey Jr. is my guy, he's my idol. So I have probably like 45 of his bobbleheads just of Griffey. So that's something great. I love dogs. I don't know if I can show that. But these are all dogs, dog mascots.
So nice.
There's some, yeah, no, they go all the way down the floor. But they're just something that I really like and appreciate. And then there's a lot of racing presents. The Nationals obviously do racing presents as a little gimmick. And me being a history guy and a baseball guy, it's a perfect merge of those two.
So correct me if I didn't hear this, but I didn't hear that when you go from 2 years of having the one bobblehead to now we are collecting. Now right. It is on.
So, all right. So it's a fair question. I recently talked to, I got interviewed by a former New York Mets columnist who is now, since he's not talking about baseball anymore, he's collecting and he's interviewing collectors. So I got interviewed in his little article recently, and he asked me the same question. How do you go from 1 to 400 in just a short amount of years? It's an aggressive number. So when I was a teacher, this is a big reason why I talk so much about finances, and when we did that adult trick-or-treating program, like, I'm really big on college students knowing the value of money. I didn't really expect the expenditures I had once I left college. I thought that just simply the job that I had would be able to pay for everything. I made the mistake of living on my own, not having a roommate. I made just other massive purchasing mistakes. So I needed money, or I wasn't simply going to make rent. So I started, like, I've always been a yard sale guy, and I've always found fun things there. So I started going more yard sales and then buying something for $5 but then selling it for $10. And then that snowballed and I would buy something for $50 and sell it for $100 and kept going. And then that led me to baseball stuff like autographs and then eventually like bobbleheads. I sold enough where I'm like finally like financially like above water. I'm not struggling anymore. And I'm like, I kind of want to keep that one because it's a Red Sox or it's a Griffey or it's a local mascot or something. And then it just snowballed, I guess, from there and it moved up to 400.
There we go. So, dang, lost my entire train of thought. I hate when that happens. But you know what, Patrick? The magical power of editing, it'll be like, this never happened. No, they're going to hear me say this. So did that same mentality lead to you getting the pendants or no?
The pendants?
Yeah.
So this is kind of fun. This keeps me like just watching and monitoring baseball all year. So behind me is – so I made those letters. It's a fun little thing. I get a little crafty every now and then. But it has the East, Central, and West for each American League and National League division. And this is the 2019 final placement. So they're finishing the season. So, like, the Yankees were in first place and the Orioles were in last. So throughout the season, I physically do adjust these pennants to show, like, who's in first, who's in second, who's in third, who's in fourth. And it's kind of fun to kind of keep up with the season as it moves forward. Haven't been able to move them since last October, but that's kind of what I do to you know, stay relevant in baseball and just stay up on all the standings.
Now, the commitment that takes, because baseball has an insanely long season. What is it, 162 games?
Bingo. And then playoffs.
The playoffs. So are you updating it weekly? Is it nightly? How's it going?
It's usually weekly. If it was nightly, I would never get the West Coast games in. I mean, they're done at like 1 a.m. our time, so I wouldn't do that. But usually it's weekly. And then there's a lot of changes, obviously, in like April and May. And then once the summer hits, there's usually a pretty clear structure at that point. There's very little changes in September. So it's really only busy in the early part of the season.
All right, perfect. So you touched on the adult trick-or-treating we did a little bit. And I kind of want to get more into that because I thought that was one of the more interesting events we ever did.
Yeah.
And the importance of just that financial piece. You still are in this higher education role. So I want you to just give a quick tips to the youngins. Well, youngins to you, my age group, I guess.
Sure.
To be things to do post-grad to not end up broken on your ass.
Okay. One, stay on your parents' insurance. Until something changes, you can stay on your insurance, your parents' insurance until you're 26. So if you're able to do that because insurance is expensive. Two, if you don't move back home, because a lot of people do that, no shame in that, have a roommate or roommates. They're going to value their independence too. They'll let you value their independence. But being on your own at 22, 23, unless you have something that's a job that's maybe $50,000, $60,000 a year starting salary, and that's just a rare piece for someone coming out of college, you probably can't do it yet. Also, you don't really have the credit to get really nice loans. Three, don't treat yourself to anything big. It's okay to still have that used car, drive that old Mazda, whatever it might be. Don't fall into a lot of these graduation specials that happen every June on car lots. It's a trap. Don't waste your money. Hang on until you have that job for a couple years, then treat yourself to a new car.
There we go. I think that's a good point for us to end it. Take those notes, people. The last thing you want to be is a person fresh with a degree and fresh out of money. This is not a good place to be. But before we go, as you know, I'm in the business of plugging people's stuff and helping all my friends grow and reach towards their dreams. You have a podcast of your own that you and your pops do. You want to give us a little bit of background on that?
Sure. So it's the Father and Son Pastime Podcast. I do it with my dad, and we talk about everything baseball. Right now, we're in our little zone of doing every team's all-time dream team. So from the moment they started as a franchise till now, who is the best player at each position? We debate it. We discuss it. It gets real fun. So you get my dad's, opinion from the 60s and 70s when he got to see those players. And you see a lot more of mine from the 90s and 2000s. And it's a lot of fun. And then we post usually two videos a week. That's our goal. So if you have a favorite team, let me know, and I can certainly share that link for you.
There we go. So I wanted to ask, what led to the start of the podcast? What was the time you went from All right, we love having these conversations. Let's let the world hear.
So we've been doing these for about 10 years now. So what started was a fun little thing for my dad and I to do when I came home from Thanksgiving break from college. We would talk about, that's like when, if you know baseball, that's like when the winter meetings happen, when free agents are like available to be signed around that time period. So we would talk about our free agent predictions, saying, well, this player, Matt Kemp, is going to be signed by the New York Mets for this reason. And we would just talk about it. And after doing it a couple of years, we realized we really knew baseball and a lot of our predictions were right. So we should record this. And I never had this, the wherewithal, the smartness, I guess, to put it on YouTube or record it like with a video. I just recorded it on my phone audio. And we would play it back for people like, see, he signed for that person. And it made no sense. So this was the inaugural year, this last November, that we recorded it. We became the Father and Son Pastime Podcast. So all that's on there too. So if you want to look at our 2019-2020 predictions for a season that never happens, that's on there too.
There we go. And I like that you guys already have your concept down to fill the dead space while there's no baseball actively being played right now.
Yeah.
Because I think it's interesting. The all-time teams is always interesting for me, regardless of sport. Like, I love that. And also, I love that since your dad was watching in the 60s and you've been growing up watching and studying the game, we have the range. So it's not more new player-centric or old player-centric. There's a balance. So I think there's really a value in that.
Yeah, and it's really fun to do the new teams to baseball, like the Rockies or the Rays or the Marlins, because they've only had about 20, 25 years of team history, the Mets, for example, because you have to look at non-Hall of Famers. It's easy to do the Red Sox or the Yankees, but these teams that just have semi-stars, if you will, on their team, and you're like, wow, that's the best shortstop they've ever had. But for our discussion, yeah, he's their best shortstop they've ever had. So that's kind of fun to bring these players that aren't going to make the Hall of Fame, never really even probably got the respect they deserved when they were playing because of all these other Hall of Famers playing. So it's really fun to give them their due.
So, Patrick, I have to thank you. You've been more than generous with your time with me. Thank you so much.
Always.
And for the listeners, thank you as well. You could have been anywhere in the world. Yeah, you're here listening to me and Patrick talk about bobbleheads, and that's good for me and my ego. So, for my man Patrick Murnan, for myself, Kevin K. Pierce, also known as Brother Beloved, this has been Experiment 301. We will catch you guys next episode.